has been kind of successful or whatever, it's like noticeable that that's happened a bunch of times. But if you don't have that shortcut, I think to me the reference point is like indigenous anarchy. And the argument that
Right.
the argument that they're making a lot of the time, that like your practice should be based on where you are, rather than it being a theoretical position so much, or such a kind of position that's emphasizing its like ability to be generalized, but instead kind of like really trying to understand the place where you're living, who the other anarchists are, like what your surroundings are like, what is your history there, like really like trying to be rooted in the place, and then creating an anarchist practice that starts there and really is like entrenched, you know? So I that's
Right.
that makes a lot of sense to me.
Right. Cool. You mentioned ritual. The last question for the topic of the week also mentions ritual. What is the role of ritual for you? I think of some people here, they do like, sometimes they align it with solstices, other times it's like a cooperative housing thing that they're doing. So either on solstices or on some nights where they're like, they just need to do it, they go out to like the cornfields and just fucking scream. For them, like, that's something they just gotta let that shit out. You know what I mean? I
Totally.
don't know. To me, like, that, to me, that's a ritual. They might not say it that way, but I would 100% identify that as a ritual.
Yeah, I mean, but
But.
you think that, like, do you think that's a positive thing, and what is, how do you view that having impact on those groups of people?
For them, it's bonding to be able to share that, to let it out together. It's because they're not doing it by themselves, which is different, right? To run into your room and just like scream into a pillow versus going out together and witnessing each other's like emotional outlet,
Totally.
right? And the way they've even described it is like, they wouldn't use the word maybe, but like it's reminding me of the word, it's ecstatic, be able to scream together and your voices come together in that way. You know,
Yeah, I
I don't
think
know, I
that's
think it
awesome.
seems good. It's like,
Yeah.
it's good to let it out together is my point. And I don't know, that was just an example of something that is a ritual that isn't necessarily, you know, established religion or something that we do as a dominant culture, but is something they do and have decided for themselves to do.
Right. Yeah, I think that's awesome. That kind of I'm really like inspired by those kind of stories, and whether they're like, I don't know, even kind of the more like kind of kooky they are or something, the more I think they're cool, you know? Like I really fuck with people creating collective ritual like that, and a lot of the time, I mean, I think anything can really be a ritual. I'm not really sure where the line is, you know. I definitely think about
Yeah, I couldn't tell you.
the black block and like smashing windows as a lot of the time a ritual that like if responding to it or framing it in that way, I think does have a real purpose, you know. And I don't know, I'm not gonna like overly focus on that, but I think that there's a lot of conversation that happens that's kind of critical of the acts that happen at riots as like maybe not doing what they're intended to do or something, but in terms of it being a collective like expression of destruction, that it seems often ecstatic. I think it serves a real purpose for the people that are partaking and also witnessing it.
Right.
And I think that's huge, you know? I don't know.
Well, I
It's.
mean, think of Greece. I immediately think of Greece, and obviously, you know, looking what happened this week, at the Polytechnic University, you know, the Polytechnic building, and what the, I don't know if they're Maoists or whatever, because there's a statement that said they're not, but point being is like, I think of Greece, and they have like holidays that the right. anarchist and other, even just anyone sometimes does. It's like the cops know there's going to be some fires in the street. People are going to get the fuck beat out of them. Someone might die, but like, and it's anticipated. That's known, right? And that's 100% a ritual that is in Greece. And what's funny is anarchists point to that, especially some of the, you know, the more insurrectionary nihilist trends around the world. But I think of them mostly in the United States, though they happen in other places. That point to that, it's like, look, the anarchists are doing rebellion. I'm like, I wouldn't say that's what that is. If the cops know you're going to do it, and it's, it happens every year, I wouldn't call that a rebellion, but it's ritual. And I'm not saying it's not useful, right? But that's also a reminder of how things become ritualized, maybe in a way that could be, you know, the fossilization of rebellion, right? Which is a form of recuperation, right? I'm not here to debate whether that's a good or a bad thing that that happens, but I could see, as you say, maybe the right's not fulfilling the purpose that's stated, but it's fulfilling a purpose. Right. And so that comes to mind pretty clearly for me.
Yeah, and I think the anarchists have this spillover, I think, from more political ways of thinking, where things are either revolutionary and they're meeting this gigantic goal, or they're worthless. And I just think if you get trapped by that, it's like you're totally limiting your range of experience and like value in life, you know. Like, it's totally fine if what you want to do isn't overthrowing the state every single time you do it or whatever, you know. You can get something else out of an act and say, like, yeah, like, you know, I live in Greece, we smash all this stuff every year on the same day, and like, that doesn't make the cops go away forever, but it has this other effect on our local community of anarchists, and it's really important to us to do that, and like, naming that explicitly, and also like, not creating a whole kind of fictional mythology about it, maybe, and then feeling defeated when that doesn't become a reality. Is like, you know, it's totally fine. Like, if you're finding value with it, especially in a group of people, like, and you're bonding or whatever, you're letting something out, like, that's great. Like, totally do that, you know.
Exactly right. There's, it just, to me, it's like, be honest about what it is, because if you're not, that's when the disillusionment might set in, when you're like, oh, I was under the belief that this is revolutionary and it was going to change the world, and then it didn't, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like bullshit or something, or you're like lying, or, you know, and
right, it's dishonest almost, but yeah.
Right, and that's maybe the thing that's so transparently ridiculous about the mainstream protest culture, is that it kind of like frames itself as being really effective, but literally it's so obvious that it does nothing, you know. It is just spectacular. I mean, I don't want to overly generalize about it, but like, it does seem to me like it is not accomplishing even a fraction of what it's setting out to do, and it is kind of this
first protest that has happened. Where are we at right now?
Right and so I'm just agreeing with you. Like, I think if it would maybe be better if people were like, well, I like to go outside, be in a gigantic crowd, and hold a sign about a thing that I think for a couple of hours, and that's like helping me deal with this really fucking bleak world, and that's like, you know, period. That, like, there's nothing inherently wrong with that or something. It's like, well, you do what you have to deal with this shit. Yeah, the dishonesty.
There's a really, I have this really, it's a really popular anarchist text that I'm just forgetting the name of, that goes over different principles of anarchism. And one of them is like, you know, is smashing windows a form of violence? Like, what is violence? And it goes on and it talks about the Greece stuff I just mentioned. And I wish there's like a quote I can vaguely see in my head, but I'm looking at my bookshelf. I'm like, I definitely loaned it to someone and never got it back. Otherwise, I would quote from it, but whatever. But yeah.
What do you think? Because I definitely get kind of bogged down in this question of strategies of thriving against assimilation or recuperation.
Don't ask me. Dude, I've been bashing my head against the wall about that the last like 3 weeks. Given some things that have happened here in terms of some direct action that I've seen and like conversations my people have been having, I'm just like, what are we doing? Like, where are we going, man? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels almost contradictory because on one hand, like, there is this really, there's this emphasis on things being generalizable, right? But at the same time, like, where is the line between recuperation and something being generalized? Like, if everyone starts doing a thing that you're doing, how are you defining whether it became recuperated or not? Because if everyone's doing it suddenly, then it is going to lose some of its bite, you know? And the thing that it's attacking is, like, very likely going to be able to kind of form defenses against it. And so, like, yeah, it's kind of... I think that that's a thing that I also don't really have an answer to right now. Is like, yeah, you want stuff to generalize, but then it does, and you're like, well, now it's meaningless, you know? Now it's just more spectacular kind of thing.
So, you know, some people, you know, and that's the caution I've heard is when our ideas become popular, because popularity makes something so much more easy to become recuperated. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a good question. I ain't thought about it in that way before. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, there are certain things, right, that are so, like, so oppositional, so illegal that it's hard to imagine them being recuperated, but those are also things that most people aren't going to want to do, you know?
Right. Yeah, this is maybe the contradiction between evangelizing. I don't know, that has a negative connotation. Let me take that. Spreading the good word of anarchy, right?
Yeah, and that's like, totally better.
not wanting to become recuperated, though. And it's like, what? You're going to talk about, oh... Actually, to be cool and always radical, which as a measurement I don't always like, just something that's radical, or you can call it radical, I don't know, whatever. It's like, but also you're limited to like five things that could never possibly be recuperated. And otherwise you're not a real anarchist, or you're making anarchy palpable to the capitalist, or, you know, gentrification or whatever, you know. I don't know. That's a whole contradiction there, where I guess the lifestyleists in a sense do have a point, you know, so to speak, going back to that.
Yeah, I think maybe just again, like, I would maybe bring it back to focusing on your local context that you understand, because like, once I start thinking about things in terms of them being able to spread, like, in really, really big areas that I don't really understand the context of, this is where this, like, confusion comes in for me. But if I am just thinking and understanding what's happening directly around me, then I'm more, yeah, it's just clearer or something, you know? Yeah, I understand the problems that are happening here, and so it's not even such a... I'm acting and making the best decisions I can given the context that I'm in. And then whether it's recuperated or generalizes is, like, not really the point, you know? It's more...
Because that's almost out of your control.
Right.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, it's almost like, are we at a point where just trying is enough? Not to sound like a liberal, but is that where we're at? Are we foreclosing possibilities before we even try them because we're scared of what the powers might do, which is still ceding territory to them? Right, and we haven't even tried, really.
Yeah, that's like, on a personal level, I think that type of attitude is a sign of a really beaten down and depressed person. That if you've decided that everything you try is going to fail, and so you just sit around and imagine all of your potential failures, but you're actually doing nothing, that is like, means you need some help, you know? Like, I don't mean like whatever, I mean like, yeah, you need like, you're stuck, you gotta like do something's gotta change, so you can like imagine your possibilities in a different way, because otherwise you do just get trapped sitting around and dwelling on things that you haven't even tried, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, and that reminds me too, you were talking again, bringing it back to this, the distinction between revolution and lifestyleism. For as much as I've written and done on the podcast and all this, like, oh, revolution, brr, that's leftism. It's not coming. But I'm like, are we foreclosing some options to us because we're like, oh, it's never coming or it's totalitarian, without ever trying to do something else? We just haven't tried. I don't know. But then it gets into this, like, post-68, all we need is just more imagination. If we just had a little bit more imagination, we'd be free. Which is, I don't know, just the same as one more candidate. One more, I don't know, one more protest. I don't know, which also, in its own way, is confining, because then you're just stuck thinking about that one thing. I don't know. I feel like I haven't... I've been asking way more questions. I haven't given a whole lot of very confident statements this whole time.
Well, that's okay. I mean, confident statements pretty overrated. I think imagination for me does play a really big role in all of this. I think it is. For me, it has felt like a worthwhile effort to focus on my imagination and kind of practice being imaginative, because it has allowed me to think creatively about how I'm living my life and how to respond to things happening around me. But I just finished the Ben Morea's book, Perfect Circle.
A Life in... Yeah.
And
that's a great book, by the way.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. I mean, you know, what it maybe doesn't even need to be said, but read things critically, whatever. But also, there is a lot of emphasis on revolution being a way of life rather than an event, and he really kind of goes back to that a lot of times, and I also kind of am a bit hesitant to use the word revolution in a positive way. But I think the way he talks about it in that book makes a lot of sense to me, and totally.
Yeah. The way, yeah.
It attacks this whole like, opposition between lifestyle and revolutionary objective, and says that they're kind of one and the same, and you should try to live a revolutionary life. Like, in every moment, if you can.
Right.
And that can look all types of ways. And I mean, all the stories in the books, like, in the book is, like, really, really pretty out there, you know, all the things that they were trying. And for me, imagination is a big part of that. And the kind of a constant attack by this society and the way it shapes us into what is possible or not is a total it's a really intense limiting of how we spend our lives, and that's like that I think that's definitely just for me has felt like a big part of my life is like undoing that or something, or at least like trying to look at that very seriously. But I don't know. I'm just into all that shit. Like, reading really kind of stuff that's, like, really out there. I think it's, it just feels good. It, like, feels like it expands my thinking or something. And then
I read that book. Mm-hmm. I was on my trip to the West Coast on my way to Canada. I stayed with Mr. Zurzan, and I read, like, almost the entire book minus 20 pages in, like, a day. Nice. I do. That book pulled me in. And, yeah, like, I think he talks about it's like climbing a mountain. But mm-hmm. if you look up, you're constantly going to be like, wow, look how far it is.
Yep.
Right. I remember that metaphor sticking with me.
Yep. Yep.
You know,
yep.
And he's a little too... He's, like, very, like, art and poetry-oriented, and my brain doesn't work in that way. So I didn't always follow or agree, but I could appreciate where he was coming from. Which, again, I'm going to call back to John Moore at the beginning. That's what he's talking about, is cultural regeneration. That's where it has to start. There's no... We can't even talk revolution. We can't talk social revolution. We can't talk any of that until we're talking culture. What culture are we in and creating? Which I'm sure... Someone out there is going to be like, well, that is the revolution. Okay, fine. Maybe. But on the other end, I think people know what I mean when I say that. Like, if we're going to talk a political revolution, which I think culture and politics, well, those are conflated now. But I think, honestly, a healthy anarchist culture would be kind of anti-politics in a certain sense of that word.
Totally, yeah.
Adam.
And I, like, to me, for this topic, too, like, I feel really, not that I'm, like, in complete agreement with these people when I read about them or read about different cultures, but when I read about, like, the Mapuche, like, resistance people, or, like, Palestine, or, you know, like, people that have... They're fighting from a culture. They're not fighting
right.
for a moment where they get to create their culture after. They're actually fighting. They're, like, planted within a specific place, and they're defending and fighting for a people and a way of life. And to me, that's like, it just seems like it makes a gigantic difference, you know? Because that's really, and the times that I've felt some version of that, where I'm like, oh, like, I have this thing with my friends, you know, and it feels like we share this way of life together. And then when that's under attack, like, the energy I feel to fight back or whatever is, like, totally different than when I'm, like, fighting for some revolutionary moment that may or may not come, you know? And so the building and contributing and, like, being part of a culture, to me, like, just makes you stronger. And more able to fight. Like, it's not, it doesn't take away from it. I mean, I'm not, like, seeing that, you know, when I read about especially indigenous resistance, but also other types of kind of people fighting back. It's like they're fighting for and from a cultural kind of foundation. So why would you not also want to have that, you know? It's like you have firmer footing so you can fight from that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I want to say I love everything you're saying. I just feel like you're saying a lot of good stuff. I just don't have much to say, but that doesn't mean I'm not appreciating it.
For sure. Yeah, no, I appreciate your question. I mean, you've definitely pushed me to, like, say more things and, like, think harder, which I appreciate. And questions.
Yeah, for me, like, I'm coming out of this perspective that I'm challenging. Of this, almost I was negligent of culture for a long time outside of a primitivist, you know, I'm, you know, go back to the podcast, you know, well, never mind. Can't do that anymore. But like what I talked about with, you know, John and Jamie and Bjorn, like this more primitivist oriented, I'm like, that's not, you know, it's not going to make it for most people. And now in my practice where I'm with anarchists that are not primitivist, in many ways are anti-primitivist. Like, what am I going to do with that? What, do I just not do anything with them because we're not in the same picture? I don't know. That's forced me to look in the mirror. Not to say I'm not a primitivist anymore. I firmly identify with that camp. But it started me to be less dogmatic about the way these things are connected. That it, just because it doesn't look primitivist doesn't mean I'm not informed by it, which doesn't mean I'm not trying to put my ideas into practice, but I need to confront the local, as you're getting to. It's about the local, right? What are my local... What's the local situation? And where I live isn't the same as Canada where I was when I was really inspired by those ideas, when I was off on the land, right? And that's just not the same situation. When I live in the Midwest and everything is either urbanized, suburban hellscape, or monoculture, well, not a whole lot of opportunity in regards to that, you know? So we have to deal with what has been dealt to us, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and also the way people are living their lives is very relevant and can oftentimes be more important than their political camp. So when you're actually building a life with other people, like, even maybe you disagree with their tendency or whatever, like, maybe the way they're actually living is just more compatible with the way you're trying to live, and that's, like... That's important. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yep.
Is there anything else, or how are we feeling?
I feel good, yeah. No, we've been talking for a while. I feel good about it. We didn't touch on this at all, and maybe that's actually a good thing, but I just wanted to add that, like, all of these things and even having these conversations is really hard to do on the internet, and I think so much of the cultural building type stuff tries to happen on the internet, and I'm not seeing it, you know?
Okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to come out to Midwest. You and I are going to do the next one in person. How about that?
Yeah, that sounds good.
We're recording on a tape recorder.
Yep, yep, that sounds great. For sure.
You gotta pay for your ticket, though.
Oh, fuck, okay, I don't know. Alright, well, do you have any closing things, or should we start recording?
No, I would just want to say, I want to echo again, I appreciate Glayer's topic of the week here. This got me thinking a lot, I've been reading it a lot. And coming back to it, and I think it pairs kind of well with the, what is it called, the house cleaning one? The one he's, like, reflecting on is the person that's coming to clean his house has an anarchy tattoo. And, like, this idea of lived, being an authentic anarchist in your day-to-day versus kind of this feeling like a poser and feeling like you're not doing enough. Those, I feel like these two came around at the same time and feel really complementary to each other in a lot of ways. On an individual level, and what the individual means as a part of a culture, and what a culture does to an individual, right? I don't know. It's all... They paired really well to me, so people listening, I think you should go check that one out. I just don't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't think I read that one. I'll check it out. Yeah, that seems like it would be relevant.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I think I feel pretty good about this. I think this is a good talk.
Sweet. Awesome. Well, yeah, I do too. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Yep. Have a good week.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Rosamonte. The What's New was written by Chisel, read by Chisel, and...
I don't have a name this week.
Unnamed. We hope this podcast...
No!
...the Anarcho Curious. Your name is I don't have a name this week, so your name is a lie.
сидел мур. Что положил я отвечу мур, смотря на кого. Чему? Да ничему. Вы спросите, ну, где кого я видел? Я отвечу, всех вас видел. Где? Не скажу. Мы из ух ваш попросим. Я никак не пойму, чем же я вам опасен. Просто-напросто ну.
Ein.
Oh,
Musik ist ganz axe. Albus. Almus. Ambe. Amborstig. Aanslag. Aap. Aarde. Aas. Ademhalen. Ademtocht.
To record heavy words. Alone I stand with my falling tears, weak from the burden that has tested the faith of poor people for years. Who dares to confront this mass confusion? Insanity reigns supreme, an unholy giant. Radicals cry for want of a solution.
Someone please tell me, how can this be? Someone please tell me, why can't this be?
Music, the religion on offer to a beardless population. Experience herself has taught me. Look to the smiles on godly children's faces. Segregation, a disguised form of manipulation. Mission to civilize all races.
Someone please tell me, how can this be? Someone please tell me, why can't this?
They question my integrity, challenge my faith. So I stand upright as proof to their history.
Here come the judge.
You must plead guilty or not guilty.
The sounds of time will answer. I will be as common as the air they breathe. Poor people culture will dominate the world news. On unclean paper they do read.
Someone please tell me, how can this be? Someone please tell me, why can't this be?
Here come the judge.
Energy from every pore. Make what you will. Are you with or without? And the force cannot be blamed. Just the hunger or greed, supplying the earth to try. Dirty water, no profit to supply. That round travel.
In every direction you turn, touch fire and burn to earn self-recognition over all preoccupy your nonsense. Leave my innocence, savor this aroma of a new experience. High intelligence bound for the underground. We burrow deep down. I originate like the word individual, visual, visionary. I vary in all of a see my eye view. Multiply to the big bad city with our human emotion running wild, not fit for the child of all ages. Accelerate speed of light, moving closer to the center. Enter at your own, if you will. Still the hustling, bustling, busy beehive is alive and kicking. I'm picking the moment. Gotta get away from this monotonous. Call the capital L up in every minute that I'm in it.
Sur Jet FM 91.2. Culture et éducation, c'est ce que propose Microculture ou Vers l'éducation nouvelle. Puis, à 18h, retrouvez Sample et moi et ses dissections musicales.
Vous êtes bien sur Jet FM au 91.2 et c'est parti pour Microculture.
Ils ont marché!
Pourquoi c'est drôle?
Parce que c'est de l'humour.
Comprenons parfaitement. Mais pourquoi c'est drôle, l'humour?
Maître Hôtel.
Enfin, vous m'en connaissez pas.
Les data riffs.
Le roi du gâteau.
Il dit 5, 4, 3, 0 et après, paf, pastèque.
Allô?
C'est du journalisme total.
Avec un chapeau, plus évident.
Oh là là, il y a beaucoup de peur, hein. Encore une autre.
Non, mais tu te prends pour un Jedi ou quoi? Faire des passes avec les mains comme ça.
Je veux juste une pomme chip.
Répétez.
Juste une pomme chip ou deux. Je suis un fanat des pommes chip.
Il faut qu'il ait l'air drôle, comme
je suis désolé.
Ça veut dire quoi, marrant? Putain de merde à la con, bordel. Qu'est-ce que j'ai tellement poilant? Dis-le-moi. Dis-moi ce qui est marrant.
Ouais, bah, j'ai connu un mec de droite une fois. Il avait 10 fois plus de clash.
Ah oui, voilà. Là, c'est drôle.
Bonjour, bonsoir à tous, bienvenue sur le plateau de Microculture, sur Jet FM toujours. Aujourd'hui, on va commencer le troisième épisode de la deuxième saison de Microculture, et le thème sera la subversion. Autour de la table, j'ai avec moi aujourd'hui, comme d'habitude, Hugo.
Bonsoir, bonjour tout le monde.
Et Salomé.
Bonsoir.
Du coup, ce thème de la subversion qu'on a choisi, un thème pas facile, on vous l'avoue. Pour rappel, la subversion, alors la définition Wikipédia, c'est « La subversion est un processus d'action sur l'opinion par lequel les valeurs d'un ordre établi sont contredites ou renversées. » Ce qui est un thème qui veut un peu tout et rien dire, selon si on le prend de la façon la plus stricte possible ou la plus large. Pour cette émission, donc, qui concerne toujours la culture, on s'est dit que dans la culture, la subversion, c'est une démarche de renversement des codes d'un milieu et ou d'un genre, avec la plupart du temps un facteur choc. Bon, ce qui est encore un élargissement du sujet qui nous laissait plus
ou moins... Mais de toute façon, on va avoir l'occasion de préciser les raisons du pourquoi de ce qu'on a choisi dans ce thème.
Exactement. Et du coup, on va pouvoir commencer tout de suite, et c'est Hugo qui va commencer aujourd'hui.
Yes, c'est parti. J'attaque avec un sujet jeu vidéo aujourd'hui. Non, c'est pas mon premier, j'allais le dire, mais ça me fait quand même plaisir déjà de parler autre chose que de film de temps en temps. Mon sujet, en fait, ça va être, il a un peu pour point de départ cet état de fait qui est que l'industrie du jeu vidéo actuel est majoritairement, surtout très grand public et surtout celle qui du coup s'impose et qui est la plus présente aux yeux de tout le monde, elle a une position presque d'allergie à la politique, en fait. Et il y a eu énormément d'exemples. Déjà récemment, il y a beaucoup de cas de petits dossiers sur toutes les plus grandes boîtes du milieu, qu'on ait des énormes casseroles de harcèlement et de trucs pas très cool qui méritent de se prendre dans la gueule en ce moment. Et en plus de ça, ça fait partie d'un espèce de fond idéologique des boîtes qui essayent un peu de désavouer totalement le moindre engagement politique dans leurs œuvres. L'exemple le plus parlant de ça, c'est le comportement de Ubisoft depuis quelques années. Ubisoft, que tout le monde connaît, on a tous joué et aimé à des jeux d'Ubisoft, plus ou moins, que ce soit les vieux avec Prince of Persia, Rayman ou ce genre de choses, ou les plus récents avec les Assassin's Creed.
Ou Just Dance.
Just Dance, c'est en plus, tu fais bien de le dire, parce que c'est certainement le truc qui fait le plus de ventes chez eux. Tous les ans, depuis 10 ans.
Oui, oui.
Largement. Par exemple, voilà, Ubisoft, eux, ça fait 3 Far Cry qui sortent et qui traitent de sujets politiques et de contextes avec des dictateurs, avec des révolutions, avec des milices, des trucs comme ça, et qui se disent qu'ils n'arrêtent pas de communiquer sur le fait que c'est pas politique, le jeu vidéo c'est une fête, c'est un divertissement et pas trop un art. Du coup, ils défendent pas, à cause de ça, ils défendent pas trop cette position. Et le pire exemple de ça, c'était à l'annonce d'un de leurs jeux, j'ai pas retenu le nom, mais c'est dans la franchise Tom Clancy, où ils ont fait un trailer qui t'explique qu'en gros tu vas être le héros qui appartient à une milice gouvernementale des États-Unis fictifs qui doivent empêcher des révolutionnaires de juste manifester et faire des trucs, et qui en plus ont un logo qui ressemble un peu à celui de Black Lives Matter.
Oui, c'est en plus à considérer avec la sorte
qui en plus résonnait beaucoup avec des actualités très violentes à ce moment-là, et qui était en plus produit par le fils de Yves Guillemot, qui est le PDG de Ubisoft.
Oui, bon.
Donc c'était l'occasion une fois de plus de dire que c'était pas politique. Et au milieu de tout ça est sorti en 2019 un premier jeu vidéo d'un studio estonien qui a eu un succès assez presque imprévisible, un peu sorti nulle part, qui s'appelle Disco Elysium, et qui est en fait un jeu de rôle, ce qu'on va appeler le CRP,